against the City of Alton, et al., number 07-1903.
Yes, if it pleases the Court, good morning, Judge Ripple, Judge Rovner, and Judge Tender. My name is Bruce Carr, and I'm here on behalf of Christina Arelopoulos, if we can say it. And I'm here because of three findings of the lower court in its summary judgment order, and I have it in my hand. First, the court found that we had presented no evidence that Christina had performed her job in a satisfactory manner. Second, the court found that we had no evidence that she was treated any differently than similarly treated employees. And finally, the judge found that we had presented no evidence that their reason, purported reason given for the firing, was a pretext for retaliation. If the court on the summary judgment order on page 2, in the court's own reference, the district court's reference to document 93, page 3, he mentions that on November 27, 2002, the plaintiff received a performance evaluation completed by Lieutenant Waldrop stating that she needed improvement in several areas. However, if this court would look at that document, it would find that there is actually a column that says not satisfactory. There is 22 standards that the reviewing officer, Lieutenant Waldrop, could have checked to say that she was not performing her job in a satisfactory manner. Not one of those out of the 22 is checked. In other words, 0 for 22. In other words, 22 for 22, in other words, were satisfactory. So how could Judge Herndon find that we had not presented any reasonable inference that she was performing her job in a satisfactory manner? In fact, he only addresses there's 7 instances where it says she needs improvement. However, 2 of the instances were directly related to the harasser, Stephen Duty, and in the evaluation, the 11-2702 evaluation, the reviewer, Lieutenant Waldrop, even refers to jailer Duty in that and says that they're going to separate her from jailer Duty. However, she was fired because of her because of what she was saying jailer Duty was doing to her.
Could I just quickly ask you what happened in the criminal case against her?
Yes, it was. She had to plead to disorderly conduct and got a supervisory, like a ticket. If she gets no other tickets during that time, it was dismissed. So it's dismissed here, I think, actually this month or next month. But basically, she pled to disorderly conduct with no sentence, no fine, not even $100 fine. Nothing, and that's what happened. But through the criminal case is how we got at least to record the tape that she was charged with, you know, with eavesdropping. And so through the mercy of the criminal court, we actually even got to get a digital copy of the tape that she was charged with, you know, with eavesdropping.
Mr. Carr, could you clarify for me which claims you are appealing? Is it the retaliation under Title VII?
Mainly the retaliation claim, Your Honor. I mean, basically, I didn't want to take the shotgun approach, and I took the rifle approach pursuant to instructions of the Seventh Circuit.
You're not appealing the summary judgment on the harassment claim, the underlying Title VII claim?
No, I have not even addressed that issue.
And what about the due process claim?
I think I incorporate some of those arguments. I do think there's a due process violation here.
Are you appealing the summary judgment granted in favor of the defense on the due process claims?
I believe I did appeal it technically, but I don't think I made any arguments, so I think I waived that probably. If you understand what I'm saying, I would like to be able to appeal that in the sense of arguing. If I had limitless pages to cite cases and make argument, I would probably have made those arguments.
So, but, in other words, forgive me because I'm pretty mixed up here too.
All right.
We can forget about any argument about post-termination hearings.
Yes. Unless you want to put that into the retaliation that they didn't treat her similar to other other employees and that they didn't give her a presumption of innocence and lied and said that she had recorded a conversation of Sergeant Botterbush when Botterbush wasn't even in that meeting by their own documents. So I think the post-termination evidence is relevant to the retaliation claim. But
are you making any argument about pre-termination hearings?
Pre-terminate? No, Your Honor, I'm basically waiving any procedural due process claim by not making those arguments and sticking all my having the rifle, so to speak, and making the retaliation claim my focus, putting all my.
Thank you.
So, in other words, the court said she needed improvement in seven areas, two of those related to duty. To the jailer himself that was harassing her, and they said they were going to separate, which they didn't. The other one was related to her having her hair down, which she said she did. Then later in the evaluation it says she actually did keep her hair up. Out of the seven standards of need improvement, she actually says that they actually said that she did improve. In 13 out of the 22, it says she meets the standard. So how could the judge say that we had not showed any reasonable inference that she met the standard? In two, she exceeded the standard, and in that she accepted direction, she was very positive, and when given directions, and they actually told her in her evaluation, it says, same evaluation the judge refers to, says that she was never given, it says that she would follow directions, and they were going to give her comprehensive training, which she never got. In two areas, she exceeded their standard. So I don't know where the court got that from, that she did not meet their reasonable expectations. In fact, she had no written reprimands in her file until she filed her written harassment complaint on March 13th. She had passed her probation, and she had nothing in her record at all that would have allowed her to be fired under any theory. Duty, on the other hand, if you look at the appendix 8, pages, exhibit 38, 39, and 40, Duty, on the other hand, the similarly situated jailer who was harassing her, had seven written reprimands for lying, for not giving medicine. When I say lying, what it was is he was confronted, and he said, I never knew that, I wasn't informed of that. And then they talked to two other witnesses that said he was informed of that, and he was not giving medicine to a prisoner. He was reprimanded on seven occasions, and on those occasions, it's in the written procedure. Whereas they're saying Christina, you know, that her performance was not satisfactory, and she wasn't treated any differently than any other employee. She was treated differently than the harasser. When Christina complained about the harassment, Duty, when he found out about it, not through the official procedures, but informally, they told him about it. He was asked, he requested an escort, and he was given an escort every time he went to see Christina, because he said, oh, Christina's lying on me. So that's in my Exhibit 8 of the appendix, the Summary Judgment Exhibit 8. And he was actually given an armed escort every time he relieved per his request, and he was given training on his restraint chair, and he was at... Is there a question?
No.
So, in other words, these findings of the judge on page 2, on page 12 through 13, that she was not performing her job satisfactorily, or that we didn't present any evidence, is erroneous, and it's erroneous to say that we didn't present any evidence that she was treated differently. In fact, then we found out, even though Rathgeb lied, we found out after the summary judgment that Rathgeb had actually been hired after he had eavesdropped on somebody and been fired from his previous employment. And I guess I'm out of time, and so I would ask the court to reverse the summary judgment, and I would also ask that I might be given some extra time on rebuttal so I can address the pretext as well.
Thank you, Mr. Carr. Ms. McClemens, we'll hear from her next for the appellee.
May it please the court, my name is Kay McClemens. I represent the City of Alton Chief Sullivan, Tim Botterbush, and Stephen Duty. To start off with, Your Honors, the plaintiff was not only discharged because of her lack of an adequate work performance, she was also discharged because she committed a felony. She also lied to the chief of the police about the acts in the commission of the felony, and she was also discharged for the inadequate work performance. In order to for the plaintiff to prove retaliation, he must show that she engaged in a protected activity. She did file a complaint of sexual harassment. In this complaint, she says that Stephen Duty harassed her, he yelled at her, he made an offensive comment to her. This was on March 9th of 2003. She told that to her supervisor. Her supervisor told her to reduce that to a writing. She put that into a writing on March 13, 2003, and she also talked about an incident that had occurred back in November, also involving Mr. Duty. Those were the only two incidents that she took and put in that sexual harassment complaint. So then she went on about performing her work duties. The chief of police was told about the incidents. He separated the two, made sure that they were not working together, made sure that Mr. Duty was escorted any time that he had to pass on to the next jail shift when she would have been coming off of that jail shift, tried to make sure that there was no contact between the two at any time whatsoever. And then she was disciplined on a couple of occasions because of her work performance. However, she was written up. She was told that she gave property, the wrong property, back to prisoners on April 5th of 2003. Then on April 28th, she admitted she had a hectic day. She was booking in some prisoners. There were a lot of things going on. She was talked to by both Captain Lane and Captain Adams. They told her that they were going to discuss her work performance with her. They talked about her work performance. They didn't fire her. They told her, was there anything else we can do to help you with your work performance? She acknowledged that they talked to her about the work performance, and she even signed off and admitted that they talked to her about her work performance. It was a couple days later that Sergeant or Tim Botterbush found out that she was actually taping this meeting. Unbeknownst to Captain Lane and Adams, she had actually a recorder in her pocket and was taping this meeting.
Was she charged just with respect to that incident, or was she also charged with earlier uses of a tape recorder?
She was only charged with respect to that incident.
Thank you.
Does the record reflect whether the Alton police arrested anyone else for violation of the eavesdropping law prior to or subsequent?
No, it does not.
To the arrest?
No, it does not. And as far as the information regarding Rathgeb, Rathgeb is an individual who currently works for the City of Alton Police Department. He worked for the City of Alton Police Department at the time that this occurred back in 2003. However, part of the record that plaintiff has now tried to make part of the record of the appellate record, actually, that Rathgeb was disciplined back in 1989 for a situation involving eavesdropping. He worked at a different police department. The City of Alton knew nothing about this. It was a totally different circumstances. It is not relevant to the case at hand in any way whatsoever. And also, he's trying to argue that she was treated differently than Stephen Duty. However, Stephen Duty didn't commit a felony. There's no allegation that he eavesdropped on his supervisors. As far as work performance goes, I do not see that that's been argued in his brief at all. That's all new information as well. I won't address the opportunity to be heard because it's my understanding that that has been waived. And the intentional infliction of emotional distress counts, there were two of those.
Due process claim for a minute, because I'm sure we'll at least have to discuss it. I was concerned about the fact that there appeared to be no compliance with the Loudermill case from the Supreme Court. There was apparently no pre-deprivation hearing, however slight, before she was discharged. Was she afforded any opportunity before she was discharged to be informed, one, of why she was being discharged, and secondly, given an opportunity to reply?
She was informed as to why she was discharged. However, there was not an opportunity for a hearing because she did not request it.
Please.
She was a member of the AFSCME union, and she also was a member of the Civil Service Commission. So she could have elected to have a hearing had she notified.
Before her discharge?
No, I'm sorry. She would not have had an opportunity for a hearing before her discharge.
How does that comply with Loudermill?
Well, there have also been Seventh Circuit cases which have indicated that when in this kind of a situation where there's people around that she could have been taping, criminal informants, drug narcotic people, anything like that, that it was in the department's best interest to terminate her quickly without a hearing.
Yeah, but see, I have the same question. Why doesn't due process require a pre-termination hearing, particularly given that the city's interests could have been protected by placing her on suspension while awaiting the hearing?
She could have filed a grievance, but you're just saying about the pre-termination hearing.
Termination.
Yeah.
I think it was because of her status as a jailer, and the situation was that she did something she should not have done, and it was in the city's best interest to terminate her without a hearing.
Well, as my colleague indicated a minute ago, though, other cities and municipalities have these problems, and the way they handle it is by suspending the person, getting them out of the workplace, but not discharging them.
She was not given the opportunity for a hearing. Judge or Chief Sullivan did say contractor union representative told her, and she knew who to contact. She could have had a hearing within had she contacted them and requested it. She could have also filed a grievance, which she didn't do. She waived her rights.
It all would have been post-termination.
That's correct. Since the other issues have been waived, I just wanted to point out the intentional infliction of emotional distress issue, it appears, has also been waived as to Tim Botterbush and Steve Duty. So it also seems that the hostile work environment issue has been waived as well, so I will not address that. So it's our position that the motion for summary judgment should be affirmed on all aspects. Then the plaintiff also had an issue as to whether or not his motions to compel should have been ruled upon differently. However, the lower court ruled that there was no the procedures were not followed as to his motions to compel. As far as the Rule 60B3 motion goes, it's also our position that the court ruled adequately in denying that motion because there was no extraordinary reason to allow further evidence in. As far as the tapes go, he was allowed to listen to these tapes before the motion for summary judgment was ever ruled upon. He was allowed to listen to them in open court in June, as he admits. And there is no evidence at this point in time that that the lower court even considered the tapes in ruling upon the issues at hand. So we would have requested the motion for summary judgment be affirmed.
Thank you, Ms. Fitzgibbons. Mr. Carr has how long? He has a minute left. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. If it pleases the court, of course it's relevant whether Rathgeb actually had recorded someone without their consent, without even being under the suspicion of a crime. She was exempt from prosecution because she was under a reasonable suspicion that she was being subject to a criminal activity. On page 4 of the court's order, he himself says that we had alleged, and she said that at the taped interview on April 28th, there was shouting, screaming, and threatening conduct. That's on page 4. Thus, it is pretextual that they would fire her for eavesdropping when Rathgeb had actually eavesdropped prior, and they hired him knowing that he had eavesdropped. And you can't fire someone. They're innocent until proven guilty. I understand the procedural due process that the court is going into now, but I think it's relevant to the pretextual nature that the reason is not legitimate, that they did not really fire her because of she committed a felony. Number one, she's innocent until proven guilty. She did not commit a felony. She did not tape, record. Botterbush was not even in that meeting at that time, and they lied and said that he was, and from the documents you can see that he was not there. It was exempt from prosecution, her conduct. You look at the timing. On March 13th, she filed her written sexual harassment complaint. The next month, she was let go. You look at credibility. She says what one thing happened in the meeting. They say something else happened in the meeting. She has the tape recording to prove it. Under oath, she says, yes, they were red-faced and screaming while they have possession of the tape. They still would not give us the tape. They still, to this day, will not give us the original tape so that we can have it examined by an expert. Anderson's statement that, oh, I've got, that she said, well...
Sir, your time has expired.
Yeah.
Our thanks to both counsel in the case, and the case will be taken under advisement. The next